Wendy Jones is known for her work on providing a service on the compatibility of drugs in breast milk and has been a registered breastfeeding supporter for 36 years. She is passionate that breastfeeding should be valued by all and that medication should not be a barrier. In her employed life, she was a primary care pharmacist. Wendy left paid work 12 years ago to concentrate on writing her books and developing her website to provide information for mothers and professionals. Wendy was awarded an MBE in the New Year's Honours List of 2018 for services to mothers and babies. In this episode, I chat to Wendy about all those common questions which start with, is it safe to breastfeed with that medication? We look at breastfeeding whilst needing medications for a chronic condition, common misconceptions with medications for anxiety and depression, whether it's safe to keep breastfeeding when you catch the common cold or flu. We look at emergency contraception. Do you actually need to stop breastfeeding while taking that? And will it affect your milk supply? Wendy tells us also about the new medications for migraines. We look at colic medicines. Is there actually any evidence for this? And do they even work? And Wendy tells me how she ended up giving out her personal phone number to the whole of the UK several years ago for any breastfeeding questions on medication and feeding, and was dealing with 10,000 calls a year. You are in for a treat with this episode, as Wendy gives us a huge wealth of knowledge on medications and breastfeeding. So go get yourself ready. Trainers on, check. Dog harness on, check. Coffee in the cup, check. Right then, let's get on with the episode. I'm Katie James, and this is the Midwives Cauldron Podcast. Listen in as we hubble, bubble, toil and trouble our way through aspects of womanhood, midwifery, birth and lactation. So go on, subscribe now. And hear us on your favourite podcast host. But just a sec, before we start on this epic episode, if you love the show and want more from Rachel and me, then head on over to our website and check out all the courses, books, collectives a go-go. You'll find all the details and occasional discount deals on the old Instagram at The Midwife's Cauldron, or, of course, in the show notes below. And if you really, really love the show, please consider two things, a single or a monthly donation over on Patreon, or even buy me a coffee. And remember, that review you leave on your podcast host really makes a difference in who listens in. Thank you for your support. We just love having you bubbling away with us. Wendy Jones, it is an absolute pleasure to have you today in the cauldron with me. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Katie. It's an absolute pleasure. I'm in my horse yard. I'm known as one of the three witches. So to be in the cauldron sounds like very much the right place to be.
It is the right place to be indeed. Unfortunately, my lovely colleague Rachel is currently, hopefully, asleep in Brisbane in Australia. And that's why it's just me today. But I've definitely got some questions for you. And yes, but firstly, I would love to ask you just if you could tell us a little bit about your fascinating history of how you got to where you are today, because your passion about breastfeeding and helping families, and you've been on this long kind of winding career, and you've helped thousands upon thousands of women and babies and families throughout your time in the business, so to speak. And that's why I wanted to bring you on.
It's been a very long journey. My first experience of breastfeeding, I was about 8 or 9 years old, and I was taken up to see a neighbour's baby being breastfed. And I just thought, yeah, that's nice. It's a new baby. Yeah. What? Where's my drink? Where's my biscuit? Yeah. But it was an introduction that breastfeeding was normal. And then post-university, a friend had a baby and we went out for coffee and she sat there feeding her baby. And I was thinking, oh, this is a bit odd. She's, you know, we're in a cafe. She's sitting on a chair outside of the Boots dispensary and she's feeding. Gosh, that's fine. But the baby's happy. She's happy. So And I was breastfed as a baby myself. I'm an only child. My mum was very, very supportive and had told me all the story about how I was breastfed and how the very first feed I had was actually a teaspoonful of Nestle condensed milk. Now, that is so wrong on so many levels. But she was told that after I was born, I wouldn't need anything till the following morning when the midwife came. And I, of course, screamed the place down all night. So this was to pacify me. So fast forward a large number of years until I had my daughter. And there was never any question I was going to breastfeed. But she was born in 1980, and I was the only person breastfeeding on the ward. Mm. And it was, you feed, your baby is brought to you every 4 hours, and you give a bottle of glucose syrup straight afterwards. And you feed for 1 minute on the first day, 2 minutes on the second day, and so on. And I went home and I got my clock watch out, and my mum said, "What the heck are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm timing the feeds." "We didn't do that." I said, "Well, it's changed now, mum." And then after about 2 days, I thought, "This is ridiculous." So I threw the watch away and fed and went on to feed my second baby. Everything was fine. I didn't have any problems. And my third baby, I was actually training to be a breastfeeding supporter at the time. And I finished writing all of my assignments whilst I was in hospital with preeclampsia.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, can you not see why I had preeclampsia?
Well.
So I qualified within a few days of my third daughter being born. And she was my challenge because she didn't regain her birth weight for 6 weeks.
Wow.
So I'd learned a long journey. But in doing that, somebody had said, "You're very, very passionate about breastfeeding. And you're a pharmacist. We have this couple of A4 sheets of paper, which has got about drugs in breast milk on it. And it's Tower Hamlets, a very deprived area of London, where most of the mums are on sleeping tablets. And we need to update that. And, you know, if there's anything else you want to put in, that's fine." And I went to work in a homeopathic pharmacy for 2 weeks as a locum. Nobody wanted to speak to me. There was an occasional prescription or a bottle of Calpol to sell. But other than that, I sat there. I thought, right, okay, I'll write this. And I ended up with 34 pages and crazily put my home telephone number on it and said that anybody who had any questions could phone me.
Marvellous.
And then CT then sent this out to health professionals all over the country. And my family then learned a lot about breastfeeding because they would get phone calls. And my husband was very good at picking up the mums who were crying, going, "But my nipples hurt."
Yeah.
And going, "You don't need me. You need my wife. She'll be back shortly." And so it began. Then when I was a founder member of the charity, the Breastfeeding Network, we set up a separate telephone line into my house. So at least my kids could talk to the boyfriends and the rest of the family didn't have to have this. Because it was also the early days of dial-up internet. So if I was on the computer, nobody could talk to me. But I then decided to go away and do a PhD and find out whether all of this stuff was valid. What was the experiences? And I sent out 1,000 questionnaires to mothers, 1,000 to GPs and 1,000 to pharmacists in a matched area and asked for their experiences. And a lot of the research still relies on that data. It hasn't really been updated because it's, you know, so basic. But the telephone line got busier and busier and busier. And there was just me and one other helper to give me a few hours off on a Friday.
Oh,
and we, when I handed it over, I estimated I was getting 10,000 messages either or by email, on Facebook or calls a year.
Oh.
And it was on everything from, can I use nail varnish or nail varnish remover to, I'm having an operation tomorrow. Can I breastfeed my baby afterwards? And I, 2-3 years ago now, decided to retire from the line because, you know, I was getting older. I was getting tired. My kids said, "You're never with us." And the BFN trained 11 other pharmacists to help run the line. They've subsequently trained another group and are currently recruiting for a third group as well. So there's a rolling program for people to ask the basics whilst I play around in the corner, still writing some fact sheets, still answering more difficult questions, but having a life and spending time with my grandchildren.
Good. Gosh, I can't imagine how busy you were and have been.
It was my phone was never out of my hand. Yeah. I was in America looking after my daughter and her first grandson, but they set up a telephone line so that I could answer calls from America. So people would get replies at all kinds of odd hours, but it was an absolute passion. And then when I got the letter from the Cabinet Office saying that I'd been awarded an MBE, this can't be right. I'm just a pharmacist. I just have a passion. I've just followed what I love doing.
Yeah.
And then to get that and then go and be presented with it by the Queen. And she very kindly said, "And what exactly is it that you do?" So I explained to her. And what was lovely was that I knew that she had breastfed her own children.
Yes.
So she was on the same line as me. And,
yes, you could understand.
And she just, yeah. And she said, "Gosh, that must be very interesting. Thank you very much. Goodbye."
But Wendy, it just shows you how vitally important this is, that you were receiving so many calls of desperation from mums, families, other health professionals, and that the BFN, or the Breastfeeding Network, which is based in the UK, has had to go on and train so many more and continue this work. I mean, it is phenomenal. And I'm so glad that you have been recognised and well-deserved and wonderful. I have used your work and I am so grateful for your work throughout my entire 20 odd years of being in this field. It's fabulous. And what's really difficult is that, and we spoke briefly before, is, you know, you've been doing this a bit longer than me, and I've been doing this over 20 years, and yet the same questions keep coming up, the same challenges for me as a midwife, or when I'm working in my role as a lactation consultant, is that I have to talk with other medical colleagues and they are confused about certain medications, or is it okay to still breastfeed? And I've had my battles in my time, and I just... Can you tell us why we've still got this battle? Why have we still got this barrier or this fear on this topic of, is it safe to breastfeed with these medications?
We'll be right back.
I just wanted to pop into your luggles and tell you about my brand spanking new podcast, The Feeding Couch. This podcast ain't just designed with pregnant women or new parents in mind, but also for all of us working in the space of birth work. This is the podcast where I hand the mic over to a different mum, dad, parent, or even grandparent to take us on their feeding journey. Every story matters. It's often through hearing others' experiences where we find our own inner knowledge, strength, and courage. Listen in to hear the stories told of triumph, challenge, heartwarming, tear-jerking, fist-pumping, and how we each deal with our venture into this new world emotionally, socially, and physically. Whether you're a student, a newbie midwife, doula, lactation exam prepper, or just hungry for more knowledge, these stories will also give you a backstage pass to the global lactation clinic. Whether you're pregnant and seeking information or supporting those on their journey, I can't wait to see you on the couch with me soon. Oh, and a little favour, your reviews on Apple Podcasts mean the world. They're like magic beans that help spread the podcast out for those who need to hear it. Let's make this something amazing together.
I think the main thing is that it's not part of professionals' undergraduate studies, or this is now just beginning to start changing. And if a pharmacist, a doctor, a nurse, goes through their training, not having had a child, not having maybe been mentored by somebody who understands about drugs in breast milk. This is a dark art. And they look in the standard textbooks, which say, do not take if you're breastfeeding. And they get scared and they think that the manufacturers must have some data on file that shows this is going to be harmful. And we also link pregnancy and breastfeeding together when actually they're very, very different. But not understanding even how breastfeeding works. So I had a message yesterday where somebody had been told, we don't know whether this drug is safe in breastfeeding. Can you stop for a month and then go back to breastfeeding if that's what you want to do? And this poor mum tried to explain that breastfeeding didn't work like that. And they said, well, you'll have to go and see if you can find some more information. And it was left for the mother to then go and seek out the information and make her own choice. And I love being able to empower women to understand what I'm saying. So I try and use really simple terms to explain it so they can go back and they can educate the professionals. But it shouldn't be that way, should it? We should be able to empower women, but they shouldn't be required to take the responsibility.
No. Absolutely. And yet it's been like that for so long.
Yeah. And very slowly it is changing. There was some work done with the MHRA in the UK where they brought in the third sector organisations to work with the rest of the NHS and see how we could break down some of these barriers and changing the wording of the English BNF so that it said in brackets things like specialist sources suggest.
Exactly.
But it requires somebody to look at it and it takes an age to get everything changed.
Gosh, absolutely. But it's even the acknowledgement that there is the breastfeeding network. There is now specialist pharmacists who are available to just have a quick phone call or a quick email.
Yeah,
and if you're a GP or you're in any other profession that's prescribing, to just say, I can wait. Normally for a lot of things, I can wait a few hours to find out the answer because I don't know, because potentially there's confusion in the literature. I'm just going to go and ring some experts. But I think it's lack of knowledge that the experts even exist sometimes.
Yeah. So that is suggesting that we're relying on a voluntary organisation to dig us out. Whereas actually, as part of the UK Medicines Information Service, there is a specialist drugs and lactation service who are dramatically underused because people don't know that they're there.
Mm.
And they've just started trying to promote themselves on Twitter and things and make themselves aware. So, yeah, it's not right that a voluntary organisation should take the responsibility. The pharmacists are paying for their own insurance to do this.
Wow.
They're doing it on top of their normal jobs.
Oh, gosh.
They're not getting paid.
But that brings us back to the literal societal, financial, governmental, policy-making lack of knowledge and respect for breastfeeding, breast milk, and these processes that we're meant to be supporting. But it's this lack of fundamental knowledge that then we can't seem to then put the finances, the money, the policies where it needs to be in every country. And that we struggle in Australia. There were certain places where I would go for information in Australia. There's a really good resource online from the US, Professor Hale. There's good books like yours, like Tom Hale's. But it seems to be a place where there's a lot of confusion still, even for midwives.
Yeah. And all the time that people see formula milk as being the same as breast milk and an easy alternative, and the formula companies are so brilliant at their social marketing, we are fighting a battle with no money against millions and millions worldwide of things that are saying it doesn't matter.
Mm.
And everybody has their choice and what's right for them. But we're not giving people informed choice because we're not taking away because we're taking away the support that they need. Not knowing that your next door neighbour is feeding, or setting up, like Sure Start used to do, those brilliant groups and hubs where you had a drop-in group and you'd sit there with six other mothers all breastfeeding, just have a cup of tea and a biscuit.
Yes.
And that helped your mental health as well as your feeding. Yeah. Having somewhere to go.
I was running one of those, and it was just, it's the simplicity of it and where it all grows.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And a lot of that came from Prime Minister Gordon Brown, who was actually passionate himself about breastfeeding. And he is the only person in government I've actually been able to find links to who have felt that this is the right place. And we can't see that we're saving healthcare costs 40 years down the line. We can only work on today, tomorrow.
A politician's term, 4 years.
Yeah.
I'm going to move us on because I want to ask you, if possible, there are several different things. So our audience is really wide, which is fantastic. But I think what I want to knuckle down is that there are several routes in terms of understanding how medications can get into breast milk, for example, molecular size, half-life, looking at whether the baby's a few days old or a few months old. Can you give us a quick tour of how drugs pass into breast milk?
Okay. So in the first few days after birth, there are massive wide gaps between the cells because large molecules like interferon, which protect the baby's gut, have to pass through. But after the milk has come in, these gaps close up. So any drug that has to go through breast milk has to pass across the cell membrane. And it's quite a complex process, and it depends on the size of the molecule and lots of whizzy pharmaceutical things like that. But actually, the breast is a very good filter. And a lot of drugs are bound onto proteins in the mum's maternal blood. And the more that is bound in the bloodstream, the less is able to get into milk. So if you think of a Lego brick, and then the drug being bound onto the Lego brick, it's too big to cross these tiny little pores. So the more that it's bound in there, the less it can get through. And there are also lots of drugs, particularly the newer drugs, which are so large in themselves that they can't get through. So things like insulin, some of the specialist antibiotics like gentamicin, and the newer biological drugs that we use for rheumatoid arthritis, inflammatory bowel disease, loads and loads of them, have to be given by infusions because they can't be absorbed from the gut. So those drugs, which are not orally bioavailable, no matter how much gets into breast milk, and it will be virtually none, the baby can't absorb it. So the time after delivery matters. But we give most drugs in the first 3 days after birth because we're used to do it. We give them antibiotics. We might give them laxatives. We might give them blood thinners. But we're used to doing that. And we don't worry about the amount that's getting through because the actual volume of colostrum is very small. So the absolute amount of drug is low. But if we're talking about a baby that's a year old, that's feeding, it might be feeding three times a day, it might be feeding 30 times a day because it's got a cold. They do these things. But the actual amount of drug is going to be very different because the baby is older and able to deal with the drug itself. And the other thing is the half-life. And the half-life is the time that it takes for half of the drug to be removed from the system. So if you take a simple thing like paracetamol, the half-life is around about 2 hours. And after 2 hours, there's only half the level of the drug. After 4 hours, there's a quarter of the level of drug. After 12 hours, there's a third, and so on. And at five half-lives, the drug is assumed to have left the body. But some drugs have very long half-lives, might be given once a day. But if this is longer than 24 hours, at the end of 24 hours, you've got maybe 80% left, and then you'd have another 100% on the top. And after two half-lives, you've got a quarter left, plus a half left, plus a whole new dose, and you actually, the baby's levels start to grow up. So those are probably the most important factors. But the easiest thing to remember is if a drug is given directly to a baby or a child, the amount getting through breast milk is going to be lower than the amount that gets to the baby through its own direct links. So we can give it pediatric paracetamol, we can give pediatric ibuprofen or the antihistamines, the most common ones. Things like worm killing drugs, mebendazole. You know, at this time of the year, I'm getting loads of queries and people saying, my kids brought home threadworms from nursery school. We need to treat the whole family. Yeah. I've got a breastfed baby. Yep. Joys of motherhood.
Of all the things, the worms issue. Oh, and the washing of the sheets and all the pajamas.
And the training behind it.
Yeah.
But the drug was going to work. You don't want it absorbed in the bloodstream so that it goes to your fingernails. You want it to stay in the gut to work.
Yes.
So actually, very little of it gets into breast milk. So you can breastfeed as normal, but all the leaflets say don't breastfeed for 12 hours. And 12 hours of denying a baby breast milk is a very long sleepless night.
Yeah, especially if you've got a baby who's, well, at any age, but really established with breastfeeding, and you're in and you've never introduced anything else. And all of a sudden, you've got to do this emergency feed with maybe you've never even expressed. And then trying to make yourself express in a state of panic and urgency is definitely not conducive to expressing a lot of milk. And then comes in that bottle of formula or two or three.
Yeah.
And then does someone think, oh, gosh, is it worth all the hard work to get that breastfeeding back? Or they're devastated and they have all this hard work in front of them, when actually thinking about it, taking a conversation, reading, utilizing the resources that are available to just question, is this right? Do we need to put a hold on breastfeeding for this medication or that one? Is what we need to be doing.
We rarely do need that answer instantly.
Yeah.
You know, and with doctors, pharmacists, their lives are getting very, very busy.
Mm.
And I know I used to work in a GP surgery, and I had the luxury of a 20-minute appointment because I was a village nag helping people to stop smoking and lose weight. I had 20 minutes to talk to people. GPs have seven. And that includes getting the patient in, writing up the notes, writing a prescription. But you can say, I will go and look this up, or I will get somebody else to contact somebody and check this out, and I'll get back to you later in the day. And then we've maintained breast milk. But the situations I hate are when people say, but why are you still feeding a baby at 1 year old? Why are you still feeding at two? That's got nothing whatsoever to do with the situation. We're dealing with a medicated situation, and your opinions are your own. And maybe you didn't breastfeed your own kids. Maybe you don't see the value of it, but it doesn't matter.
Exactly. I mean, it's so common and we hear it so often that it has no value. There's no nutrients in the breast milk anymore. So, you know, we need to start this medication. You need to stop breastfeeding, as if it's very easy, very quick. There isn't an emotional, psychological well-being component to it. And this is what's so difficult. And I think the other thing is that's very hard is women with chronic conditions. So let's take, for example, autoimmune disorders and or long-term depression, or where they would be seeing a specialist throughout their pregnancy and they are on a certain medication, and then right at the last minute, all hell breaks loose of, oh, she's got into labor. Oh, can we actually breastfeed with this medication? Oh, I'm not really sure. And that's when I would get called in to go, Katie, you need to sort this out. You're the lactation consultant. And it's like, this woman's been coming in and being given care, apparently. Why have we not put a plan in place to, if we need to change the medication, to have been able to do that at a rate that it works for her and her body, to be able to see whether it's effective, to be able to give her informed information to make an informed choice? It's just
exactly. I had a lady this week who had been asking for information throughout her pregnancy, and was now 15 days postpartum, and nobody had been able to tell her whether her drugs were compatible with breastfeeding. And she was expressing and formula feeding while searching out the information for herself. And it was a biological drug, and it had continued in the third trimester. So I also had to say, your baby can't have live rotavirus vaccine in the first 6 months of life. And nobody's told me. I feel so let down by everybody that nobody has told me this. And it's just not fair. And if you deliver at midnight on Saturday on a bank holiday weekend and there's a skeleton staff on, we need to give women the choice to produce their own package of information to keep in their notes that says, I have discussed with my doctor blurb that this drug can be used in breastfeeding and this is the evidence behind it. And that somebody along the way signs that off, and so that we get to delivery and there is no question about the compatibility with breastfeeding. We're not looking to a junior doctor who hasn't got a clue about whether this drug is safe or not, has never met the question before.
Yep, exactly. It seems like it's something so easy.
Yeah.
Because we have actually quite a long time to be thinking about this. And yet you and I know so many people listening will have encountered this problem so many times, particularly lactation consultants. If you're on the ward, someone will ring you and say, you've got to sort this out. And that's when I'm really grateful for people like you that I can then ring, and also the books I can go through and go, hang on a second. You know, it's just so many phone calls I will have experienced very similar to you as well. I've been told this, and then the feeling of being so let down when you say, actually, blah, 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 here's the information.
And sometimes when I've used my Facebook page to say, okay, I want to write about this, and people have said, I was told I had to stop, and it was only when I saw your information later on that I found I never had to. And you can't imagine the heartbreak that my child and I went through in order to stop breastfeeding. It is truly heartbreaking, and it's still what makes me get up in the morning when it picks up the phone, spending the hours writing the fact sheets. Because if one person has asked the question, there's probably 10 others somewhere who haven't asked but need the information.
And what are some of the most common questions you receive on some of the most common medications where there's confusion or fear?
Probably antidepressants. Because anxiety and depression often go together, as you know. But the worst thing is, if you're anxious, the thing that you want to protect most is your baby. And somebody telling you that you shouldn't breastfeed on a drug or should stop breastfeeding for a certain length of time, somebody else tells you something different, your anxiety has shot up even further. And need a lot of support. And people being told not to breastfeed for a certain length of time after they've taken the drug. Somebody somewhere has looked at a half-life and said, well, if you don't breastfeed for 6 hours, 7 hours, 12 hours, then it's okay. But, you know, like I said, the half-life of any drug comes down in 5 half-lives. The same as if you're taking a drug every day, after 5 half-lives, it's just at a steady level. Because otherwise, your depression is going to come up and go down. If the drug stopped working, you're going to get depressed again. If you stop taking your paracetamol, your temperature goes up again. There is absolutely no point in trying to time these drugs, but there is so much confusion, so much anxiety. And there was a new drug that was launched on the market in America this year called Zuranolone. And the manufacturers are saying this is a wonder drug. It's a 2-week course and all symptoms of perinatal mental health will resolve in this 2 weeks. But you can't breastfeed during the course and you can't breastfeed for a week afterwards. But we know that oxytocin in breastfeeding actually helps to stabilize your mood and to try and stop abruptly. And trying to express for 3 weeks is blooming hard work. But actually, if we look at all of the research and the way the drug is handled, the amount getting through in breast milk is very small. But the manufacturers aren't required to agree to that because they haven't done the tests. We have to look at the specialist sources.
Yep. And we can't do the testing because who's going to allow their baby to be tested on? Of course, ethically, morally, and no one would enter those trials, however much money was going.
But even drugs that we've had around for 50 or more years, the leaflet in the box still says, do not take or ask your doctor whether this is compatible.
And that's planting the seed of doubt. So even if you've maybe spoken to someone who said this drug is absolutely fine, you might have the mother go home, read the leaflet in the box, and that hasn't been explained to her about why the leaflet in the box would be saying something different to what I'm giving you as information. That then plants even more seeds of doubt of who do I trust, the manufacturer or the person I've just spoken to?
Yeah. And that was one of the questions that came up when I did my PhD 24 years ago. The written word was seen as more powerful.
Wow.
Maybe one day we get the manufacturers to change it, but I think they will always be worried about litigation. We're all worried about being sued.
And it's Big Pharma is a lot of money. So, yes, we did a podcast on Big Formula. I'm not even going to go down the Big Pharma route. I had to do enough research to check my back for that one. Oh, dear. Wendy, we touched on chronic conditions. And, you know, there's many, many women who are dealing with taking regular medication and are now pregnant or are embarking on breastfeeding. Is there sort of common answers or common themes that you can give us some answers to in terms of taking medication for a chronic condition?
The interesting thing that I discovered when I was writing my book about chronic conditions is that most of them are far more common in women than they are in men. Sucks. We drew the short straw again.
Yeah, I know.
But they're also often linked with being formula fed as a baby. And that's probably about the foreign proteins crossing the guts and setting up these different autoimmunities.
Wow.
So for a woman who's got a chronic condition, she may be absolutely desperate to feed her baby to protect it from developing what she's got. I have a particular passion for inflammatory bowel disease, which if you look on my website is fairly apparent. There's more posts on that than anything else. But it's because I have Crohn's disease myself. Now, I do wonder whether that first teaspoonful of Nestle condensed milk did something, or whether I caught a virus later on that did it. But I was absolutely desperate all through my breastfeeding career not to give my baby's formula unless I absolutely had to. And the time when I was fittest was when I was pregnant or breastfeeding. But with a lot of chronic conditions, you can get a flare soon after birth because you've got limited sleep time. You're sleep deprived. You're stressed because you don't know having this new baby is different. And it doesn't matter if you've had six babies before, this baby is individual. and may not conform to the same things. So I think anybody with a chronic condition should make a plan in advance to enlist help from others around the house. So anybody who visits should bring food.
Absolutely.
They should offer to do the washing or the ironing or make you a cup of tea. If they come to visit, you do not get up and make a cup of tea.
Absolutely.
You leave the things out. And everything is done so you chill with your baby, and ideally in skin to skin, so you're having that oxytocin, you're resting, you've got lots of opportunity to start off the feeding going well. And then, you know, we can make sure the medication is in place. But be aware that there might be a flare. And if so, what are you going to do about it? Do you need to have rescue steroids available to you so that you can hit it at the first time? But accept every help that is possible that doesn't involve somebody taking the baby away from you unless you want it. If you want somebody to take the baby away to change the nappy or to bath, then, and that's something that dad can do, and is still a fantastic bonding time for them, amazing, but not, I'll take the baby away and give it a bottle so you can have 4 hours sleep. Not helpful, because you may be opening up this baby's gut.
Thank you for clearing that up. It's like words from my own mouth as well, hearing the sort of food, not flowers. And don't you dare make a cup of tea for anybody else. But also it's, and in terms of if people are seeing their specialists and their specialist is sort of sitting on the fence and going, oh, I'm not sure about these medications. What, and we have women from all over the world. So where can women go? What's the best places for them to go and seek information? Is it to change specialist? Is it to get more familiar with their local doctor? Will they have to do their own research?
I think it very much depends on their own environment. Some areas are really good, some are not so. There are freely available resources like the BFN fact sheets, like my fact sheets,
and we'll link to
like LactMed and eLactancia, which are all free to access. Lactation consultants should have access to Hale to be able to provide the information for you. There are lots of places that can get it, but it may be that you do need to empower yourself to go and seek out the information. So if somebody tells you that you can't breastfeed on drug X, ask them why. Could they provide research to show that? Is there an alternative drug? And I think medics need to start off with the idea that this mum is breastfeeding. What drug can we give her to control her symptoms but let her carry on breastfeeding, rather than I need to prescribe drug X. Can she breastfeed? We need to keep breastfeeding as the central point, because we're not just protecting this mum and baby now. We're protecting them for the next 40 years down the line. We're protecting their cardiovascular health when they're 60. We're protecting them against cancer. We're protecting the babies about all of these illnesses, respiratory, gastrointestinal. Breast milk is so much more than just milk. It's a whole, I kind of want to say it's an ecosystem by itself.
It is.
It's a living environment. And it's what we're meant to have. Stone Age woman did not go out and milk a dinosaur if she ran short of milk.
No. And human milk's alive. It's there and it's changing in response to us also getting sick. So if we get the common cold, or we get knocked out by the flu, or you've got toddlers running around and they've got a new virus every 2 to 3 weeks, as it feels. And I know they're meant to have it to boost their immune system, but us poor parents and poor mums who are breastfeeding the new baby, this can often also bring about some confusion of, should I keep breastfeeding? Am I going to pass viruses through to my baby? And I am putting on a side note, I'm not touching on COVID at all.
you know, at the moment, it's fairly obvious. I have a cold, which I've picked up after from my granddaughter, who I have daycare one day a week. Her mum, out of the whole of the two families, mine and her own family, has the least symptoms because the baby is passing back the message of, I've got a virus. Please, could you make me some antibodies? And so she's being protected as well as protecting her own baby. I maybe need to go. Could you express some breast milk for me? Because I'm fed up with this cold.
I think that would be a good idea.
This is the third one I've had since September.
It's really not fair. But when mums are feeling sick and they have succumbed to the mighty virus and they're feeling absolutely unwell, there's often a thought from the rest of the family or even the mother themselves, am I doing damage by keeping breastfeeding this baby? Should I formula feed for a while or should I express and dump, pump and dump? And I mean, I know the answer is no. We clearly say, don't do this.
Yeah. This is the magic of breast milk, about this two-way passage of messages of, I need antibodies, and you are doing everything to protect the baby by continuing to breastfeed. Whether it's a gastric bug or a respiratory bug, you are passing on the best medicine that you could possibly give to your baby. And I know some people express to give it to their toddlers or their old school age children. Yes. You know, here's a cup of milk to protect. Because it's the more I've learned about breast milk over the years, the more I've come to respect it as being so much more than we could ever imagine it, that is possible to be. And that formula companies can never, ever hope to do this. They can't say, oh, there's this respiratory virus going around X village, oh, we'll change the milk there. No. It's a standard formula, tastes the same every day. That's always universal. Whereas breast milk is changing day to day, during the day, month to month, year to year. But still, whatever age the baby is, it's still providing those antibodies.
Mm, absolutely.
And oxytocin to mum as well.
Yes, a multitude of things. Can I ask you about contraception and emergency contraception as well? So those times when women are breastfeeding and think they've got everything sorted and then, oops, oh, we had maybe what wasn't a desired effect. Of we need some probably emergency contraception. Oh my goodness, I'm breastfeeding. Can I take emergency contraception?
Yep. Both the two types of emergency contraception can be taken without any changes to breastfeeding. There might be some slight changes in milk supply because you're using usually quite a high dose of a drug that's very similar to the pill. But it will return. And I know Ella.
It's all right, I get the same often when I'm recording.
There is one brand of the pill, which is known as Ella-1 usually, which the manufacturers say that you can't breastfeed for 7 days. And yeah, fine, that's seriously impossible. But actually, if you look at the research, there is no need to interfere with breastfeeding at all. You can carry on as normal. It was one of the first levonorgestrel one was the first one which was brought out that said manufacturers say you can breastfeed as normal on it. But retrospectively, they changed it. And I think they just got a bit scared about taking responsibility because nobody else was saying, yeah, you can. So that I think currently says 12 hours, which is long enough. But it feels like you're kind of being punished for having a moment of passion.
Absolutely. I mean, still, you hear the stories of going in for the morning after pill and people being questioned and given the third degree. And you think, goodness, it's 2022 or 2023. Goodness me.
Yes.
Yeah, there's many issues we need to deal with. We'll stick to the ones we're able to change and empower upon. That's good to know. Can I touch on something which is so common for so many new parents to go out and seek or be given advice to go and buy, which is to help with colic, which I'm putting in inverted commas in terms of we're not having a whole discussion about colic here. That is a much bigger picture of breastfeeding and a huge topic. But you have some really interesting information in your What Matters, Why Mother's Medication Matters book about a particular colic medicine from, I think it's only in the UK, it might be in other countries as well, but I think that would be lovely for you to just tell our listeners about.
Yeah, these are called coleaf drops. And the idea is that they destroy the lactose in milk on the assumption that babies with colic are lactose intolerant. Lactose intolerance is actually quite rare and usually would be very, very obvious in the first few days after birth, and is usually genetic. So there's actually no evidence that they would help in the first place. But the directions are to add it to expressed breast milk, and then to administer this breast milk at the end of a feed. But the study that it related to included a very, very small number of families, most of whom did not complete the study because they found it too difficult. And it meant that you actually had to incubate the milk for 12 hours. So the whole instructions about express a bit of milk, put the drops in, feed, and then give this extra bit. Well, it's likely that that extra bit is going to make the baby chuck up anyway, because you've filled it up, it's come off the breast of its own accord, and then you're giving a little bit more. It's like, you know, I went out for a meal last night. If somebody had given me another portion of the crumble that I'd just enjoyed, my stomach would have reached over point. But we forget, if we add this into the baby when it's already decided it's full, we may go over this. So it's a product that's quite expensive. It's can be prescribed in the UK. But the evidence behind it is really, really poor. But to have a baby with colic is soul destroying. Mm. When you're carrying them around and they appear in pain, it's hard. And my eldest had what appeared to be colic, and I remember how hard it was. But I work on the principle is if a baby's mouth is open, fill it with a nipple, because at least it keeps it quiet.
Yes, the original pacifier.
Why are we using drugs in a way that is not evidence-based, that isn't even being recommended according to the protocol of the research? Yep. Makes no sense.
Makes absolutely no sense. And yet it is something in many people's shelves, I can imagine.
Yeah.
I want to wrap us up, and but I wonder if you can give us an example of one of the most maybe seen as banned medications, which is actually fine with breastfeeding.
So I've already mentioned most of the biologicals that people are frightened of, but which have zero oral bioavailability. But there are two very new drugs on the market to treat and prevent migraine. Now, I did a big presentation on migraines this week, and that involved me researching these because they said immediately, no, you can't be used in breastfeeding. So one of them is called Remegivant, and the other one is called Fremenezumab. And in the UK, their use is restricted when everything else has failed, because of cost, and one of them can only be prescribed if the manufacturers supply it directly, because they've come to a commercial agreement on the cost of it, which I think is quite unusual. But actually both drugs have low oral bioavailability and quite high protein binding, So if all else has failed, they will work. And another drug that is being used to treat migraine is Botox.
Oh, yes.
Lots of mums are using it for cosmetic purposes, but there is a lot of use of it in medical uses, and one of it is to prevent migraines. Now, we only have a case study where one mother got botulinum poisoning by eating salmon, but they tested the baby and there was no sign of any of the toxins appearing in the baby's system at all, because again, it's this giant molecule that can't get through. So if a mum wants to use botulinum toxin, Botox for a medical value, whether it's for migraine or for her hemorrhoids or one of the other multitudinous uses, there seems to be no adverse effects. And I've had feedback from lots of women who have said, I had a long battle, but this has changed my life. And it's enabled me to function as a wife and mother again.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the whole point, isn't it? To be able to find, if you're needing a medication, to find the one that fits, but in terms of a holistic approach, that you can continue being the breastfeeding mother that you're planning to be and not stopped in your tracks with fear and worry. And then this whole panic of how do I get this baby to stop breastfeeding and onto a bottle immediately?
And not risk getting mastitis because breast milk doesn't turn off like a tap.
Absolutely, exactly. Yes. Ah, Wendy, it's been brilliant speaking to you, and your books are easy to read and highly, highly recommended. And I'm really grateful for them. And the fact sheets that are available on the website is just, it's just a plethora of information. So I will link to that in the show notes. But before you go, is there anything you would like to send the message out to any midwife, doula, obstetrician, or mum to be, or parent to be who needs to hear something today?
There is almost invariably a drug to treat your medical condition or your symptom and allow you to breastfeed. Sometimes we might need to use an older drug or a different drug, but if somebody tells you you can't breastfeed on a drug, don't just take that as the truth. Go search out. And if you want to email me, if it matters to you, it very much matters to me.
Thank you, Wendy. It's been a real treat to have you and to talk to you. I really appreciate it. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. It's been a great hour.
Thanks, Wendy. Bye. Please don't press pause, but instead scroll on down on your podcast app. Yep, that's it, down there, and pop a review and maybe a few stars to make our eyes twinkle with glee. For more on breastfeeding and lactation content, head on over to my website where my course is. And for courses and books from Rachel, you can find everything in the links below. So here's the bloopers. Is there some good advice that is not really getting over?
Hang on, hang on. There's somebody at the door. It's so funny. I have dogs in the room with me, and this one delivery driver knows that they go ballistic. So he stood there with a parcel across between his face and the window where they can see. Going, they can't see me. They can't bark.
That's fine. We've had all sorts of animals. Luckily, mine's at the groomer's now. So for her first ever haircut, she's 6 months.
Oh, bless.
So I got the times wrong, and luckily my partner's off today. He's off on Fridays. Oh. And he's nervous to go and bring her back, and I go, what?
So what sort of dog have you got?
She's an Australian cobber dog. So she's a mixture of, oh, she's got Labrador, Poodle, Cocker Spaniel, Wheaton Terrier. So they're bred as therapy dogs, assistance dogs. I use a wheelchair part-time. So I needed a dog that would be easy to train. Otherwise, I would have gone to the pound, because that's my belief. but we went for this dog, and she is an angel and been changing my life. So
wow. So I have cockapoos, and my second one was supposed to be being a therapy dog for the fire service.
Oh, wow.
And he has an absolute natural ability to go to the grandchildren when they're upset and just lay his head on their laps. And one of the grandchildren has ADHD, and he's sometimes the dog is the only thing that will calm him down.
Yeah.
But it's just instant. But he's more spaniel than poodle.
They're just beautiful. I started down the route of cockapoo, and then it came up with cobber dog, and cobber means mate in Australia.
I am. Bless her. Yeah. But I do remember crying after the first trip, going, what the hell have they done to my dog?
Don't. I'm just like, please don't bring her back all pointy. I want that nice square beard she's got. That's fine. Oh, dear. Wonderful. I love it. Dog people. It's good. Okay, I'll get back on track.
Give again, goats.
Right, here we go.
Again.
Wondering which of my courses is for you? Breastfeeding and Lactation, The Fundamentals has been designed for everyone working in the birthing field or those on their journey to becoming breastfeeding specialists or IBCLCs. This course gives you 7 hours of CPD and is packed with reflective learning, case studies and some pretty tough, at times, quizzes to make sure this stuff sticks. It also means you can meet me monthly in my live Q&A. This is my course that I hope will fill in the gaps that traditional breastfeeding education has left out. I want you completing this, feeling confident to support any breastfeeding or lactation challenge of those in your care. But wait, I have another course called The Feeding Couch. Who's this for? Currently, around 80 to 96% of women decide to breastfeed during their pregnancy, but by just 8 weeks after birth, a third to almost 50% of those women have stopped breastfeeding. And of those women who stopped, 80% say they stopped breastfeeding before they wanted to. Learning about breastfeeding during pregnancy has been shown to improve breastfeeding self-confidence and improve the rate of exclusive breastfeeding in the short and the long term. I believe every mum should be able to choose how she wants to feed her baby and for how long. Knowledge is power. That's why I created The Feeding Couch, designed to be watched during pregnancy or for new mums and parents who may be struggling right now with breastfeeding. The content is in step-by-step, binge-worthy whilst pregnant or for those most tired of days postpartum, totally easy to find exactly what you need and dip in and out when you need a breastfeeding answer quickly. And for you, beautiful podcast listener, there is a 10% discount off both courses when you use the code POD10, that's P-O-D-10, at checkout. To find out more, hop on over to my website, katiejames.site, and have a look at the incredible content waiting for your lucky peepers.